face hardship or when we're going through a season of suffering, it's natural to question why these challenges come our way. Are they random events, or does adversity signal the judgment of God? Tough questions. And today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll explores the biblical account of the Egyptian plagues and shows us how these ancient events carry timeless lessons about God's nature and His purpose. He'll reassure us that God's actions are neither random nor vindictive. From his biographical series on Moses, Chuck titled today's message, Plagues That Preach.
In the Bible, there are four great eras of miracles. During these periods of time, the only way to describe the events that took place en masse on earth would be through the word miracle. These were supernatural manifestations in which God stepped in on the earth scene to do one of several different things during that time. Three of the four eras are history, one is prophecy, yet to come. The first era of miracles came in the days of Moses. The second came in the days of Elijah. The third in the days of Jesus. Those three are history. There is one era of miracles yet to invade this earth, which we could call the era of future judgment. During this time, God will invade and bring upon this earth a series of what we might call plagues, divine miracles, so as to mete out upon the earth a severity of judgment, fulfilling His word. It is interesting to me that the first and fourth era of judgments are similar in kind. Each one resulted in a new, fresh, beautiful lifestyle not known by those people who lived through that time. In the days of Moses, as we will see, those who lived through the plagues, among the Israelites that is, entered into a new land under a new leader to begin a new way of life as a nation. Those who live through the period of the tribulation will enter into a time on this earth of fantastic, incredible peace, fulfilling God's promises to Israel. In other words, the period of future judgment will open up a new era in kingdom life in which Jesus Himself will serve as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Now, tonight we're looking at the first period of great judgment or miracles on the earth. And we have to, in just the fact of time, survey a good portion of the study tonight. I confess to you that this is not a biographical study, though we are engaged in a biographical study of the life of Moses. I nevertheless chose not to overlook the plagues because they so much were a part of that leadership Moses offered Israel. And I wanted you to at least get a glimpse of what he went through as the leader under God bringing about these plagues. So let me give you three facts to remember about the plagues of Moses. The first fact, which is borne out in a few verses we want to read in a moment, is this. God's voice predicted the plagues. God's voice predicted the plagues. They were not afterthoughts. They were not last-minute exceptions in His plan. They were planned by God, predicted by Him. Look at Exodus chapter 3 for a few moments. Take verses 19 and 20 together. Exodus 3:19. God said to His servant Moses, I know that the king of Egypt will not permit you to go except under compulsion. So I will stretch out my hand. Notice the prediction. And I will strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of it. And after that, he will let you go. Chapter 4, verse 21 says a similar thing. The Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders which I have put in your power, but I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Notice God predicted the plagues. These things were said at the burning bush. They were as much a part of the plan of God as the calling of Moses or the Exodus itself. God planned the plagues. They were not an afterthought. Now, the second fact to remember, Pharaoh's nature required the plagues. He was a stubborn old king, and the only way that God got his attention was through the presence of plagues. Look, for example, at chapter 5 and verse 2. Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I do not know the Lord. And besides, I will not let Israel go." Watch out, Pharaoh, I want to say as I read that. You don't know what you're saying, man. You're talking about the God of heaven. He has the final say. But see, Pharaoh was a stubborn king. It's an old saying that you must fight poison with poison. A common thought that would go along with it is, in order for you to deal with those that are stubborn, you often must be very strong. You that have counseled other people know that when you talk to the stubborn, they usually don't hear you when you use tender, sensitive, quiet phrases. If you talk to someone who is stubborn by nature, you usually have to get their attention. Not with a 2x4, though at times you feel like using one, but often with a confrontation that would break the heart and spirit of the sensitive. Some of you know that because you live with those that are stubborn. You know, if you really want to get through, sometime you've got to yell. Sometime you have to do all sorts of things to attract their attention. That's what God did with Pharaoh. Look at what God said about Pharaoh, chapter 7, verse 14. The Lord said to Moses, "Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. He refuses to let the people go." Now, because Pharaoh's nature was what it was, the plagues were essential. Now, the first fact to remember is the plagues were planned by God, predicted by him. Second, the nature of Pharaoh required the plagues. Now, the third, Moses' question prompted the plagues. Show you the question I'm talking about. Chapter 6, verse 10. Moses' question prompted the plagues. He asked the Lord a question, and God's answer came in the form of 10 plagues. Exodus 6, verse 10. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Go, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the sons of Israel go out of his land." Moses spoke before the Lord, saying, "Behold, the sons of Israel have not listened to me. How then will Pharaoh listen to me? I'm unskilled in speech. If the Israelites won't listen, how in the world will Pharaoh listen?" "Ah," says God, "I'm glad you asked. I have available 10 plagues that Pharaoh will listen to." And so God, as it were, rolled up his sleeves and moved in on Pharaoh. Take the yellow sheet that you received upon entering tonight and look on the back side of the sheet to a chart. I especially want to call your attention to two facts, two general statements regarding the plagues themselves. One has to do with the column that I have marked extent, and the other has to do with the column I've marked result. Notice it's a simple chart that begins with the first plague and goes all the way down to the 10th, and it gives you scripture and the extent of each as well as what happened as a result. The first thing I notice generally about the plagues is that each plague reached all the Egyptians. There were no exceptions. Notice the word all in that column marked extent. All the land, covered the land, all the land, all the land, all the livestock, all the men and beasts, all the land again and again and again. All the firstborn right down to the last. Tell you, when God's judgment wheel turns, it may turn slowly, but it turns exceedingly fine. All things are naked and open before Him with whom we have to do, says Scripture. If this study does nothing more than show you the thoroughness of God's judgment, it will have done its work. It isn't a happy picture that I paint, but it's a real one. I have a book in my study entitled Living Under the Smarting Rod of God. It's written by one of the old divines. And it is just filled with, it's a book of perhaps 2.5 inches wide, of filled with reminders of God's thoroughness when it comes to moving in on man and woman. And this study tonight will show you that He does a thorough job of it. So I say that generally, all the plagues reached all of Egypt. Now, second, I want to say this. None of the plagues softened Pharaoh's heart. None of them. From beginning to end, he starts with indifference and he ends saying, "Let the people go," but his old heart was still hardened. He stayed at the task of stubbornness. And believe me, he is a living example of what it means to reject the goodness of God. Okay, now let's go to Exodus chapter 7. And forgive me if that's necessary to say, for surveying something that really should take longer. But our study is not the book of Exodus, I remind you. It's the life of Moses. And therefore, I'm not interested in an in-depth study of the plagues, but just to give you an overview of what they experienced in the land of Egypt. Let's go to plague number 1, which was blood, beginning at chapter 7 and verse 14. The Lord said to Moses, "Pharaoh's heart is stubborn. He refuses to let the people go. Go to Pharaoh in the morning as he is going out to the water and station yourself to meet him on the bank of the Nile. And you shall take in your hand the staff that was turned into a serpent. And you will say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, sent me to you, saying, Let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. But behold, you have not listened until now. Thus says the Lord, by this you shall know that I am the Lord. Behold, I will strike the water that is in the Nile with the staff that is in my hand, and it shall be turned to blood. And the fish that are in the Nile will die, and the Nile will become foul. And the Egyptians will find difficulty in drinking from the water of the Nile.'" Now, let me say that to the Egyptian, the Nile was basic to life. Not well water. Well water was often contaminated in Egypt, and even till this day, it often is. So the Egyptian often drew his water, both for bathing, cleansing, cleaning of his clothes, as well as drinking from the Nile. Furthermore, one of his staple foods was fish. To strike the river Nile with blood is to hit at the heart of their diet. Water, a fresh supply of it, and fish, a fresh supply of that. And so God moved right in to the heart of their living, and he touched it with a harsh hand. Notice verse 20. "Moses and Aaron did even as the Lord had commanded. He lifted up the staff and struck the water that was in the Nile in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants. And all the water," there's the word now, all the water that was in the Nile was turned to blood. "The fish that were in the Nile died, and the Nile became foul, so the Egyptians could not drink from the Nile. Blood was through all the land of Egypt." And just picture that for a moment. The place where you would normally go to draw your water can no longer be a source. The fish that you normally would provide for your families, ladies, no longer was available. This caused all sorts of difficulty. Except for a little bit of water that was contained in the houses nearby, there was no water available. Look on the next page, verse 24. So all the Egyptians dug around the Nile for water to drink, for they could not drink of the water of the Nile. 7 days passed after the Lord had struck the Nile. 7 days, seven nights, without a water supply and without the supply of fish. Now, for some here, you would say, that's all I would need. At that point, I would say, He is God. Let the people go. Bring back the fish. I'm thirsty. Let's go on now. I get the message, but not Pharaoh. Not on your life. Pharaoh, as a matter of fact, just turned on his heels and acted indifferently. See in verse 23, Pharaoh turned and went into his house with no concern even for this. Pharaoh didn't even give it a passing thought. He was hardened. So plague number two visited the people. Verse 2 of chapter 8, we begin with the second plague. If you refuse to let them go, behold, I will smite your whole territory with frogs. Now, when you read that, you think of the normal creature, the bullfrog. Lanky, quick, in fact, good to eat. Believe it or not, some of you look at me with that, I'll never eat a frog leg, but you don't know what you're missing. And the Lord told them that, verse 3, the Nile will swarm with these frogs, which will come up and go into your house, into your bedroom, and on your bed, and into the houses of your servants, and on your people, and into your ovens, and into your kneading bowls. Oh, God, help us. Frogs in the bread. Can you imagine what that would be like? I've got a drain that I have buried in the side of our house, as many of you do. It's a 3.5-inch plastic pipe that's buried in the ground, and it carries the water from a low point in my backyard down to the front, and I've cored out the concrete curb, and the pipe comes right out to the curb. This is common out here in California. You see it all the time, and it is to carry the water right on out from the gutter on my patio as well as a low area in my backyard. Some time ago, it was stopped up. And I couldn't imagine what could have stopped up a 3.5-inch plastic pipe. And I wasn't about to dig it up. So I got an idea. I got a water hose and added an extension on it. And I went way down to my curb and I shot it full force up into the pipe. You know, the wrong way. Shot that water up in there. And man, it filled up and it kept taking water. And finally, it stopped. And it wouldn't take any more water, so I turned the hose off, and I got down on all fours, and I looked in that pipe, and the biggest toad you can imagine jumped right out at me. Oh, it's terrible. He just, boom, he was all out there. 3 inches. He was so big. He'd been living up in this old pipe, and he had just stopped up my drain. There he was. Boom. I thought as I saw that, wow, what would it be like? It's bad enough to have him on the street, but to have him in your kitchen, in your bedroom, in your closets, in your clothes, all over. Friend, that's a plague. That's what happened. Verse 6, Aaron stretched out his hands over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land. Every drain in Egypt was plugged up. Everyone. Frogs everywhere. Now you'd think, wow, that'll do it. But it didn't. As a matter of fact, God was even gracious not only to bring water back where there was blood, but to bring a removal of the frogs. Look at what He did. Verse 12, Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh, and Moses cried to the Lord concerning the frogs which he had inflicted upon Pharaoh, and the Lord did according to the word of Moses. And they died out of the houses and the courts and the fields. And look what they did. They piled them in heaps. The land became foul. And when Pharaoh saw there was relief, he hardened his heart. Did not listen to them as the Lord had said. And that didn't get to it. Now we come to the third plague. It's a curious thing, but it's a noticeable observation that every third plague was unannounced. Every third plague was a surprise tactic. Interesting. God occasionally will predict his plan, but on other occasions, he comes up with a surprise tactic, and that often gets our attention fastest of all, but not Pharaoh. Here is an unannounced plague, verse 16. The Lord said to Moses, "Say to Aaron, stretch out your staff and strike the dust of the earth, that it may become gnats through all the land of Egypt." By the way, the Hebrew term doesn't mean lice as you might have it in your AV if you're using the authorized version. It is the word that describes a black stinging insect that would penetrate the nostrils and the ears of its victims. I suppose mosquito would be close, or like the black stinging fly that you often find in the North Midwest. The frequents around the rivers up there, if you've done any canoeing, you know what I mean, even the northeastern areas, plaguing to the campers. But these little tiny black insects carried with them a sting, and they were a nuisance.
You're listening to the Bible teaching of Chuck Swindoll. And keep listening, because Chuck wants you to hear from his daughter, Carissa, who serves as the president of Insight for Living. But first, I want to remind you, you can dig deeper into this biography of Moses by requesting the brand new Searching the Scriptures Bible Study. This spiral-bound workbook contains all 20 messages in Chuck's series, and it's available right now by calling us at 800-772-8888. Or look for the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study on Moses by going to insight.org/workbooks. Also, did you realize all 20 sermons in this series are available on CD? The collection is in stock right now when you call us at 800-772-8888. And now, here's Chuck.
Well, today I'm delighted to be sitting right next to our daughter, Carissa, who over the last year has been the president at Insight for Living. And thank you for that, Carissa, and your leadership and the beautiful way that you have blended the team together. And today I want you to just talk a little bit about what's on your heart that you'd like these folks to hear.
Well, most of all, I'm excited to share the incredible provisions God has blessed our ministry with over the past 45 years. It's just been amazing. One of my favorite moments is witnessing the miracles the Lord performs, especially during times when we face financial challenges, and He provides in remarkable ways. A number of months ago, one of our staff members expressed concern about our financial situation, noting that we were not where we had planned to be. I admitted that perhaps I should be more worried, but I shared with him that having dedicated most of my entire life to this ministry, I have always seen the Lord come through for us. I encouraged him, saying he was about to witness firsthand the miracles God can do. Remarkably, 6 days later, we received a very generous estate gift. While people often leave us in their estate, we can never anticipate when this will happen, which makes it difficult to depend on such gifts during our budgeting process. We have always embraced this uncertainty, continually awed by God's faithfulness and the love He has for our ministry. We remain patient as He guides our paths, and I can confidently say that He has been faithful to us time and time again.
Wow. Isn't that the truth?
It's just amazing.
Yep, it surely is. And you've been aware of it since you were just a teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's been marvelous. Thank you, Carissa. And thank you, dear friend, today for your part in this ministry. You're part of that miracle. Believe it or not, a gift of any size that comes to Insight for Living means the world to us and makes it possible for us to continue to reach out, touch the lives of others, and hear from them as those lives are changed.
Thanks, Chuck. If you'd like to get in touch with Chuck Swindoll and Insight for Living, let me give you our contact information. To write a letter or send a donation, here's the address. It's Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas, 75034. This media ministry of Chuck Swindoll is supported entirely by those who value his Bible teaching. And as we approach Thanksgiving in the United States and as Christmas is right around the corner, we're encouraging you to make a contribution to this nonprofit organization. As Chuck said a moment ago, when you give, you're part of the miracle that empowers us to share these messages every day. Our address again, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas, 75034. If you'd like to speak with one of our friendly ministry reps, call us at 800-772-8888. Or anytime, day or night, go online to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer, inviting you to join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his message called Plagues That Preach, Tuesday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Plagues That Preach, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.